Welcome to History Lost in Time, from one enthusiast to others.
And welcome to episode 17. Yes, the title is likely to cause a bit of confusion here or there, so let's move on quickly.
Why this topic today?
I own a book with a title that roughly translates to House Book for the German Family, published by the Registry Office Berlin. No publishing year is mentioned, but from the content I gather it was published somewhere between 1935 and 39. Okay, so I already covered sources with this. I love books like this. They are from a specific time, speak the language of that time, address the people of that time with issues of that time. So until we have time machines, you won't get closer to the past. The ads alone in these books are both entertaining and informative. When I read the chapter about marriage and weddings, I knew it was worth an episode. This chapter provides a glimpse into the sneaky association of conservative way of life and National Socialist ideology, and it also shows how National Socialism assigned value to both people and life itself.
Political background and commentary.
I actually don't have a political agenda here. I just want to put a spotlight on a small aspect of life in Germany in the 1930s. At the same time, I want to show how National Socialism dehumanized certain parts of the population slowly. Unfortunately, people of the present often put their own interpretations on things that were said and done in the past, even if those interpretations are clearly wrong. Primary historical sources like this book allow us to listen directly to the past, circumventing interpretations and to try to understand for ourselves what was actually meant. In case of this book, we can see an excellent example how the Nazis used elegant propaganda to connect conservative views on marriage and family with Nazi ideology. Unfortunately, I don't know how widespread books like this actually were and how intensely they were read. However, such house books do have some level of tradition. They did exist even before World War I, and they were still published after World War II. Before TV and internet, they were probably a good source of information for the entire family. And since you only needed one per year, they were probably also cheaper than magazines. At least the one book I have was used quite a lot, as the book has significant signs of wear. So let's check out the table of contents. What's in this book? The chapters are called Leaflet for Marriage, Mother and Child, Marriage, Family and Kinship Group, Sippe in German, which doesn't really translate well to family or clan, Home and Household, Healthy Eating. We clearly see that this book addresses the core family, parents and children. Obviously, the book is soaked with the ideas and ideals of the time, so we get the usual mix of attitudes from that time, plus Nazi ideology regarding marriage, family and children. In this episode, I want to focus on the leaflet for marriage, the advice given in the book, and a few ads. If there's interest, I can, of course, discuss other chapters as well. The leaflet, which is actually more of a full chapter, starts on page 8 with the words, "The health of husband and wife is the prerequisite for the happiness of any marriage." At first, this sounds both obvious and irritating. After all, nobody would really argue against being healthy. However, we have to keep in mind that the Nazis had their own definition of health. One has to keep the opposite in mind. What about people that, according to Nazi laws, are not healthy? This is discussed further down. Quote, "According to the Marriage Health Act, marriages are not allowed from the outset if A. one of the fiancés suffers from a contagious illness that raises concerns about significant damage to the health of the other party or their offspring. B. one of the fiancés is legally incapacitated or is under temporary guardianship. C. one of the fiancés, without being legally incapacitated, suffers from a mental disorder that makes the marriage undesirable for the community. D. one of the fiancés suffers from a hereditary disease within the meaning of the Act for the Prevention of Hereditarily Diseased Offspring, unless the other fiancé is infertile. Let that sink in for a moment. According to this 1935 law, the state was allowed to deny marriage to people based on their health. So it was possible to deny two people to marry when one or both of them suffered from hereditary diseases, chronic diseases, or some kind of mental disorder. This is a massive infringement on personal freedom. The paragraphs are also using fuzzy language, which allows clerks from the registry office a lot of wiggle room for interpretation. So what are contagious illnesses that raise concern about significant damage to the health? Where is the line between significant and insignificant damage here? The hereditary diseases mentioned in Chapter D are actually listed in the Prevention of Hereditarily Diseased Offspring Act, but in this act there's also room for interpretation. However, it's paragraph C that opens all kinds of doors for arbitrariness. What kind of mental disorders make marriages undesirable for the community? And how do you defend yourself against a wrong diagnosis? May it be by accident or on purpose regarding a mental disorder? That's far more complicated than when dealing with physical disorders. Let's transfer this to the present. It seems that psychological problems like ADHD and depression have exploded in the last couple of years. According to this law, people suffering from these may be banned from marrying. Obviously, people of all times aren't just stupid, so it's very obvious what would happen. One avoids psychologists and creates a facade. One cheats. In other words, people are taught to not ask for the help they need, but to cover up their problems. Now you might argue that mental disorders means major mental disabilities and not stuff like ADHD or depression. However, the problem isn't which kind of disorders are meant, but the fact that people are evaluated and classified like this at all. According to this law, there are people whose marriage is welcomed by the community and those whose marriage isn't. However, once you put a value on people and life like this, once you don't treat each life with the same level of respect, you start falling into a very deep chasm, because what kind of mental disorders are actually meant is now just a formality, something that can be defined in a law or an implementing regulation. Something minor that can have massive influence on the life of individuals and that can affect anyone. From this point, it is, and it was at the time, very close to the point where you put a general value on people and life itself, not just when it comes to health, but in a very broad sense. Who may marry? Who may live in freedom? Who has to live without freedom? Who has to perform forced labor? And who has to die? And no, this isn't such a big leap. Here in this book, this leaflet is talking about a 1935 law that says that people with mental disorders may not marry. Starting in 1934, there was a program running in Germany which, based upon this already mentioned Prevention of Hereditarily Diseased Offspring Act, led to the forced sterilization of 400,000 people. 5,000 of them didn't survive the operations. And in 1939, Action T4 was launched, the extermination of people with mental diseases. About 70,000 people were killed. When this action became public knowledge and resistance was forming, Hitler stopped the action in 1941. However, the SS continued the program within the context of the Holocaust in the extermination camps in the East, far away from the German population. To be completely fair, it has to be said that there were many countries in the early 20th century that had eugenics laws. Those laws did include forced sterilizations. The German Wikipedia article mentions the following countries that had such programs: USA, Sweden, Great Britain, Switzerland, Canada, Denmark, China, India, Mexico, Czech Republic, Greenland, and Peru. However, only Germany performed state-organized mass murder. Let's return to the text. Further down, it is said that many diseases can be healed and that a visit at the doctor's may uncover diseases that haven't been noticed yet. It is also stated that every fiancé needs a proof of race regarding himself, herself, the parents, and all grandparents. After all, one has to follow the Nuremberg race laws, meaning no Jews or non-Germans among the ancestors. The last half page of this two-page leaflet lists all punishments that one could face. Marriage with Jews or non-Germans, except those that are considered Nordic, that means prison. Lying at the registry office, at least 3 months in prison. Manipulation of any kind, prison. And the punishments regarding infectious diseases and STDs are really strict. One could get up to 3 years of prison for those. So let's keep in mind, if you want to marry in the Third Reich, you have to spend a lot of time at the doctor's office, and many people are simply not allowed to marry. And keep in mind that back then, marriage was much more valued than today. Unmarried being together is largely accepted in today's society, but not back then. Simply not marrying wasn't an easy option. On page 10, one can find 12 key sayings, with the subtitle German human, German family, German people. I'll pick a few of those. Numbers 2 and 3 are attributed to Adolf Hitler. Number 2 says, if the strength to fight for one's own health is not present, the right to live in this world of struggle ends. Please notice the right to live. For Hitler, the world is a large combat arena, and whoever isn't strong enough simply has no right to live. That point of view explains a lot of the things that Hitler later ordered. As said, this book was published sometime between 1935 and 39. And again, you can find value attributed to people and life, as said before, with all the consequences that happen because of it. Number 3 says, the sin against blood and race is the original sin of this world and the end of a humanity that surrenders to it. Hitler stresses his theories on race and his race laws here. Marrying someone outside the allowed pool of people that the Nazis define is, according to this, the worst thing one could do. And it will lead to the end of humanity, as said, published between 35 and 39. Number 12 starts with a fairly strong sentence. German youth, keep your body and mind clean. They do not belong to you, but to your nation. In other words, you are the property of your nation, part of a community, not a self-determined individual being. That is the main difference between a free society and an autocratic or totalitarian one. People in free societies have freedom of choice and bear the consequences of their actions. In autocratic or totalitarian societies, people don't make their own choices. Choices are made for them, whether they want to or not. Most of the other key sayings are either simple propaganda or very generic ideological sayings. Starting on page 11, there are the so-called 10 commandments regarding the choice of spouse. I will again pick out a few, since most are again either simple propaganda or rather ideologically generic, like the first one, which simply says, keep in mind that you are German. It again stresses that one shall not think and act individually, but that one has to orient oneself to the rest of the community. Number 5 says, as a German, choose only a spouse of the same or Nordic blood. Again, it is said in crystal clear fashion who one may marry and who one may not. Following the propaganda policy of the Nazis, few messages, but repeating those a lot until they have been hammered into the heads of people, this is just a repetition of what was being said before. According to this commandment, the so-called mixing of races leads to bastardization and ultimately to the downfall of the nation. Quote, happiness is only possible with similar people. Number 6 says, when choosing your spouse, ask about the ancestors. This point goes even beyond the Nazi race laws. According to this, more things about the family should be analyzed. For instance, quote, gifts of the mind and soul. Again, there is a lot of room for interpretation. I quote, bad traits are inherited just as much as good ones. A good person can carry within themselves seeds that will turn into misfortune in their children. Therefore, never marry the only good person from a bad family. In other words, according to this commandment, the fate of a person depends upon the family. It is irrelevant what the person brings to the table himself or herself. Rather sobering. Number 8 says, marry only for love. Money is a fleeting possession and does not bring lasting happiness. Where the divine spark of love is missing, a good marriage can never develop. A brief sensual intoxication is not true love. For once, I can only agree. Number 10 says, you should wish for as many children as possible. If you combine this with number 2, which says that everyone free of hereditary diseases should marry, then it's almost an order from the state. Everyone should marry and have as many children as possible. This commandment actually states that 3 to 4 children should be the minimum. The Nazi ideology demanded that the German people should increase dramatically in size, even though during the election campaigns of the 1920s and 30s, the Nazis claimed that the Germans didn't have enough living space. But it wasn't possible to achieve the Nazi goals of conquest and colonization without this. Many, many people were required to fight wars and set up colonies, especially in the East. Starting in 1938, the so-called Cross of Honor of the German Mother was awarded to women who had many children. The Bronze Cross was awarded to women with 4 and 5 children, the Silver Cross to women with 6 and 7, and the Golden Cross to women with 8 children. That shows the goal the Nazis had: a multiplication of the size of the German people by a factor of 2 to 4 with each generation. These 2 points are an excellent example of how the Nazi propaganda connected conservative views on marriage and family with Nazi ideology. Most parents at the time probably wished for their children to marry and have children of their own. The pressure to do this probably varied from family to family. However, Nazi propaganda picked up this wish or recommendation and transformed it into a duty, exaggerating it into the extreme. This is exemplary for many things regarding the culture back then. Ways of life and traditions that were originally unproblematic were picked up by the Nazis and then twisted, exaggerated, and perverted. And when National Socialism was finished, one had to start at zero, because even the original now felt uncomfortable. I want to finish this gloomy episode with a view on some of the ads in this book. So what did people from the registry office think that newlyweds should have? First of all, you can find ads you expect, for example, ads for household goods like furniture, but also wedding stuff like photographers. From the ads you can gather that these books were probably distributed on a regional level, because the one that I have only includes ads from one specific area. The first ad I want to mention is one for a radio. I don't just claim without basis that radio broadcasting was rather important at the time. This ad says, listening to the radio means experiencing it. The radio in your home connects you to everything happening in the world. That's why every home should have a radio. The second ad is at the very end of the book. It's a full-page ad, no pictures, and it says in large letters, books belong in every home. The bookseller is just waiting to present them to you. Again, I can only agree. People read books. Won't hurt you, can only help. The part that is the most useful today in this book is the very large section that lists recipes. That's basically half of the book. More than 150 pages of recipes, 3 to 4 per side. Soups, vegetables, meat, fish, sauces, salads, sweet stuff, baked goods, even vegetarian stuff or stuff for sick people, canned goods. So whoever wants to know what people ate in 1930s Germany, you can find out in this book. And yes, these recipes were also considered good advice for newlyweds back then.
Finishing words.
Books like this house book provide an interesting glimpse into everyday life of the past. Obviously, you won't find any secrets or deep thoughts of key people from that time. But if you are more interested in the everyday life of average folks back then, you will be able to find out using books like these. These books are usually not that expensive, so I can only recommend them. At the same time, you can use modern day knowledge to find traces of certain ideologies. In this book, it is possible to find the first steps towards euthanasia. Now, you shouldn't blame people from this time that they didn't recognize these first steps for what they were. As said before, back then eugenics laws were rather widespread, and those did include forced sterilizations. But what we can do today is to be aware of our present. Now, today, in all countries, we can find out which political movements are heading into the same direction that is hostile towards freedom and life. And we can do something about that.
Thank you for your interest.